Namaskar.
Bienvenue.
I'm from Bangalore, India.
Dublin, Ireland.
Turkey.
The Philippines.
This is Feet in Tours.
I came here to study.
To work. To volunteer.
Build a life of my own.
Welcome to Feet in Two Worlds.
Esto es Con los Pies en Dos Mundos.
Bir ayağım burada, bir ayağım orada yaşıyorum.
Welcome to Feet in Two Worlds.
Life for immigrants in Arizona after the U.S. Supreme Court's ruling on SB 1070. I'm John Rudolph, executive producer of Feet in Two Worlds, a project of the Center for New York City Affairs at the New School. The U.S. Supreme Court handed down a split decision in late June, striking down key portions of Arizona's tough immigration law known as SB 1070, but leaving one key provision intact. So, is the law being enforced? And what impact has the court's decision had on Arizona's political and legal battles over immigration? Joining me on the phone from Phoenix is Valeria Fernandez, a Feet in Two Worlds contributor who covers the Arizona immigration beat. Hi, Valeria.
Hi, Sean. Thank you so much for having me.
Valeria, is there a palpable change in Arizona following the Supreme Court decision? And if so, how do you describe it?
People were waiting for this decision in the immigrant community for several weeks. You know, everybody was holding their breath to see what was going to happen. And the reality is that that portion of SB 1070 that the Supreme Court upheld hasn't really quite gone into effect yet because they're still waiting for a court process. Their decision has to go down through the lower courts to actually go into effect. So nothing has changed from the enforcement point of view. Police departments are getting ready. Phoenix police, for example, they've been getting training all along ever since SB 1070 became the law in 2010. You know, one thing that we need to understand is that the portion of SB 1070 that went into effect basically makes it mandatory for the police to ask you for documentation to prove that you're in the country legally if they have reasonable suspicion that you're here without documents.
And that would be during a traffic stop or during any kind of questioning for any sort of suspected crime, right?
Actually, any time that you come in contact with the police for any reason, they can ask you. There's a little bit of leeway when it comes to someone that's a victim of a crime, of a witness, because there's a provision in the law that says when reasonable and when it's not going to obstruct an investigation. Today, even if that portion of the law is not in effect, the police can still do that. Nothing forbids them from asking for documents if they suspect that you're here in the country illegally. They have the discretion to do that if they want to, and they do it. They do it quite frequently. That's why we've seen so many people in Arizona jails that are there because they don't have a driver's license or they are there waiting to be picked up by immigration authorities. This is already something that is very normal for the undocumented residents of Arizona.
So what I hear you saying is that on a practical level, the Supreme Court's decision really hasn't had much of an impact at all, that things are going along as they had been before the Supreme Court handed down its decision.
In a sense, things are going in the same way, but people are naturally a little bit more scared because now it's going to be mandatory. So that means that every single police officer will have to ask you for documents if they suspect that you're in the country illegally. And not every police department was on board with asking for papers. You have differences, and now it's going to be basically the norm for them to have to ask you for documentation. You have officers like Sheriff Joe Arpaio, deputies, they will ask you for papers anytime. You'll have some police officers in Phoenix Police Department that will do that. Now everybody across the board will have to do it. So it magnifies the potential impact, and people in the immigrant community are naturally scared. The thing is that we've already gone through a wave of families leaving Arizona in the last the last 5 years, there's been a wave of people leaving the state, going to other destinations where they feel safer. Those immigrants that remain in the state without papers now, they're more used to this situation, and they are more informed about their rights, and they're here for the long run.
What about the portions of the law that were struck down by the Supreme Court? Did that bring any relief or comfort to undocumented immigrants in the state and to advocates for the immigrant community?
Well, the Supreme Court was a mixed bag decision. And one of the most controversial portions they opposed, which would have made it a state crime to be in Arizona without papers, you could go to jail if you didn't have documents. So that was certainly a relief for a lot of people, and especially, you know, a lot of immigrant rights activists believe that that was a success because of the impact it could have nationally. If you can imagine a lot of other states imitating Arizona and making it a state crime to be here without papers. But when you go and you talk to immigrant families, for them, it's more of the same. You're still running the risk of leaving your home and being arrested by the police because you don't have papers. You're still living in fear. So the status quo has changed. It hasn't gotten much worse, but it hasn't gotten better.
What about the political aftershocks in the Arizona state legislature? I mean, are there active efforts now to try to reenact the portions of SB 1070 that the Supreme Court struck down in a, you know, in a way that might stand up to a court test? And also on the other side, has the court's decision in any way energized the immigrant advocacy community to try to make other kinds of political inroads?
I mean, at the state legislature, we're not in session right now, but some of the Republican leadership, some of the Republican leadership have stated that they want to stay away from it because Governor Brewer has framed the Supreme Court decision as a victory. You have to remember Senator Russell Pierce, which was the main advocate for SB 1070, the architect behind the law, is no longer in the state legislature, so he is a force that's no longer there pushing for the type of bills. He's running for re-election. If he gets elected again, then there might be a chance that we would see attempts to, you know, strengthen SB 1070. But if he doesn't get back into office, I don't think it will happen. On the other side, as far as the pro-immigrant movement, we're seeing a lot of activity. I don't think I can keep track with the number of voting registration and civic engagement campaigns that we have going on here in Arizona. There's groups like Promise Arizona in Action, Adios Arpaio, which literally means goodbye Arpaio, that have the goal of registering over 50,000 new Latino voters. And they're very specific.
Do you think that those movements, those organizations, are directly as a result of the Supreme Court ruling and kind of the settling for now of the SB 1070 question?
I think that these movements, they were born back in 2010 when SB 1070 became the law, they're ongoing, and the recent ruling is just giving them more ammunition and motivation to keep, you know, to keep trying to make a change at the local level, even if it's, you know, a legislator at a time, a council member at a time. We saw the kids, you know, from Team Awesome, these young undocumented youth that were very involved in helping getting a Latino council member elected last year.
Was that in Phoenix?
That was in the city of Phoenix. And so they got a Latino council member elected in a district where Latinos, you know, they were the majority of the voters, but they weren't participating a lot. They managed to grow their registration by 400%, getting 400% new Latinos on the voter rolls. And you also saw the success with the recall of Senator Russell Pierce in the city of Mesa. So all of those things continue to give ammunition to this movement for more participation in the political process. It's a much different political climate than the one we had 2 years back when SB 1070 took effect. The activist community is much more organized, and everybody gets it, whether they have papers or not, that they have to be part of the political process if they want to stop this type of legislation.
Arizona Governor Jan Brewer, as you pointed out, called the Supreme Court's decision a victory. But what was the reaction, and what has been the reaction in the advocacy, pro-immigrant advocacy community? Do they consider it a defeat, or are they claiming a victory of a different sort?
Depends on who you ask. I mean, some politicians that are pro-immigrant in Arizona are claiming that it's a victory because some of the harshest parts of the law were rejected. And then you have another group of people that are very concerned because even though SB 1070 lost a lot of its teeth, you still have the police being able to pull people over. It's mandatory for them to ask for documents now. And there's still a risk that a simple police talk will lead to your deportation. So the concern of certain pro-immigrant groups like the Puente movement is that what is the federal government going to do about this? How is the federal government going to respond when the local police calls and says, here, I have an undocumented immigrant? Will they pick them up? Would they help in their deportation of this person, or will they respect the priorities that they set of not to go after people that are here with a family and focus on hardened criminals?
Has the message changed since the Supreme Court decision?
No, I think the message remains the same. You know your rights, make sure that your rights are respected. But what I see is that they're emphasizing now the pressure on the federal government. Federal government, Barack Obama, what are you going to do about it? We have SB 1070 going into effect in Arizona. You said you're not going to deport mothers and parents. You want to focus on criminals. We want to see that you will do that and that you will stop using programs like Secure Communities that are helping to separate all these families. So I see that they're shifting and they're focusing more on the federal government. By the end of this month in July, they're going to start a tour. It's a vast that's going to go across the country. And I think it's going to stop at the Democratic Convention with undocumented families. You know, you have the undocumented students coming out and saying, I am undocumented and unafraid. Now you're going to have families that are undocumented coming out and making the same statement and going all the way to the Democratic Convention and trying to bring their stories to the attention of the national media and also the president.
So there's been a lot of talk leading up to the presidential election in November about the role that Latino voters will play nationally and whether Latinos will vote this time because of disappointment with President Obama's immigration policies and a lot of negative sense about Mitt Romney's proposals for dealing with immigration. But it sounds like from what you're saying, there is in Arizona, in any case, that there might actually be a pretty robust turnout by Latino voters at the polls this November.
Exactly. They may not go to the polls motivated and excited to vote for President Obama, but they have other reasons to go to the polls. You have a number of candidates locally that are Latino. Some people that were activists, they're running for the state legislature. They're running for a county board of supervisors. A lot of young Latinos for school boards. And that's going to be a reason why the voters are going to go to the polls. And we know that Latinos, most of them are favoring President Obama, whether they're frustrated or not. And I think in Arizona there is a sense that you can change the politics a little bit at a time. People are excited about that.
Valeria, very interesting. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much, John.
Valeria Fernandez is a Feet in Two Worlds contributor based in Phoenix. To read more about what's happening in Arizona, go to our website, fi2w.org. This podcast was produced by Sarah K. Kramer and Jocelyn Gonzalez. Thanks to SiriusXM Satellite Radio. For more stories by and about immigrants, visit our new website, fi2w.org. I'm John Rudolph. Thanks for listening.
Feet in Two Worlds is supported by the New York Community Trust and the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation,
with additional support from the Cyrus Fund, WNYC New York Public Radio, and the Ralph E. Ogden Foundation.
This podcast was produced in association with the CUNY Graduate School of Journalism and CUNY TV.
Feet in Two Worlds brings the work of immigrant journalists to public radio and the web. We're a project of the Center for New York City Affairs at the New School.
Subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Podbean, or by using the Stitcher Smart Radio app.
You can support this podcast by going to news.feetintoworlds.org and clicking Help Support FI2W.